Last October, during the midterm elections and Mitch McConnell's Senate race, we took you inside Kelvin Cooperage that's on the outskirts of Louisville, Kentucky. Now, Kelvin makes oak barrels, and what you're hearing there is the sound of a booming bourbon business. Barrels being made and going out the door as fast as Kelvin can make them. Bourbon is big, big money in Kentucky and everywhere else these days. And that's why the cops have been hot on the trail for years for the thieves behind a massive bourbon heist there. Well, they had a major breakthrough this week when a court in Frankfort, Kentucky indicted nine people for a series of bourbon thefts worth well over $100,000. These thefts involved hundreds of bottles of a particularly coveted brand of bourbon. That's Pappy Van Winkle, named for a traveling salesman who started selling bourbon in Kentucky in the late 1890s. The nearby Wild Turkey Distillery was also hit. But the theft also uncovers a lot about a purely American industry that has a long history, if not of theft necessarily, of myth-making and of artifice. Reed Mittenbuehler is author of the forthcoming book, Bourbon Empire, The Past and Future of America's Whiskey. It comes out next month, and he's here in the studio with me. Reed, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having me on.
Now, in the spirit of full disclosure, we should tell people that you and I are close personal friends. We've had many bourbons together over the years, I would say, but your book is coming out, and that's why I wanted to have you in at this point. It's a theft. Thefts happen all the time. Why did the theft of Pappy Van Winkle capture everybody's attention so much?
I think that what's so exciting about this theft is Pappy Van Winkle has become kind of a unicorn brand. As bourbon has blown up in the last few years, I mean, production's double what it was a decade ago. Brands are flying off the shelves. Pappy has become a bit of a, well, it's a total status symbol. It's almost impossible to get. Just a few years ago, you could hardly give this stuff away. It sat on the shelves covered in dust. But as it's become, you know, a trendy drink again, people are really going after this one. You know, it's a little more expensive, and it's become kind of the boast of. There are shortages of it. Prices have gone through the roof. And it's become a cult symbol.
A cult symbol. Is there anything inside the bottle that has made Pappy Van Winkle so sought after, so celebrated? Or was there kind of a mystique around it that was elevated by this theft?
Absolutely. As far as production standards go, as far as the liquid in the bottle, there isn't much about it that is that much more special than other brands. It's a little bit older, 15, 20, 23 years old. Those are the expressions of Pappy. One thing I don't think a lot of people really understand about this industry is that, you know, it used to be literally thousands of different smallholders, you know, making this stuff. And the history of the bourbon industry is one of consolidation. Over 200 years, we've gotten to a point where it's eight corporations running 13 plants that control over 95% of the liquid you can buy. I think that's surprising to people when they go to the store and they see hundreds of different brands and you think these are all made by small independent businesses. But really, most of the liquid can be traced back. That's also the case with Pappy. It's actually made by the Buffalo Trace Distillery, which makes a very good product.
Well, when I think of Pappy Van Winkle, you know, I look at the bottle, I think of an old guy with a beard with a little still in the back of his shack in the hills of Kentucky. I want to go there and see the rustic way bourbon is made. Can I go to the Pappy Van Winkle Distillery?
Well, and that's funny because if you look at the bottle, it does say, you know, the old Rip Van Winkle Distillery, and that's kind of an illusion. You know, it's made at this plant that makes lots of other brands, and it's a good product. Pappy is a symbol. You know, people see this idea of authenticity, of heritage. It's not an old brand. It's really only been around since the 90s. But when you see it, you think, you know, this goes back to the frontier. This goes back 100
years. Pappy Van Winkle's been selling bourbon door-to-door since 1890. No, Pappy Van Winkle lives on a label, on a bottle.
Right. And Pappy, you know, did have a big part in the industry, but it's his grandson, Julian Van Winkle, you know, the third. And he marketed it, named it after his grandfather, who is this figure. And I've always found that fascinating about the industry is that all these old labels, these old dates, very few of them really have a true connection to that past. But that's what Americans, you know, that's what they're really buying into is this idea of family, heritage, authenticity, and history.
And there's a lot of that that goes on in bourbon, right? There's Old South authenticity. There's some Old West authenticity that people seem to really be after. And that's kind of led to an industry of mystique when you raise the curtain on this industry.
Yeah, it's actually a great curtain to kind of pull back because there is this wizard behind it. You know, it's like the Wizard of Oz. And when you see that wizard, you know, he's wearing a suit. And he works on Madison Avenue. There's a little bit of that element to it.
He works for a French holding company. We should add that Pappy Van Winkle and the brands that it belonged to are owned by corporate conglomerates, right? Even Maker's Mark is owned by a corporate conglomerate. So many brands these days are.
So many brands are. when you look at the arc, and I thought, you know, for the book, that bourbon, there's no better symbol of American capitalism than this product. You know, it started, it was used as a form of currency on the frontier. It was a way for farmers to hold on to the value of their crop by distilling it into this other thing that would actually increase in value as it aged. And then with the Whiskey Rebellion of 1794, you kind of get this soul for, or this battle for the soul of American business, Alexander Hamilton versus Thomas Jefferson. It was around this whiskey tax. Hamilton was championing a consolidated industry, you know, fewer larger producers. Jefferson was famously the champion of, you know, small yeoman holders. And over 200 years, you know, in the first few decades of that, Jefferson's vision kind of held true. But by the time you get to the year 2000, you have eight companies, you know, just over a dozen plants making almost all of it. That's changing a little bit today. We've got a lot more craft producers. The numbers on this are still squished. There's so many of them. It's over 500 just in the last few years that have entered the scene. But they still barely move the needle. It's still less than 5% of the total market. When you go to the store and you see what looks like a million different, you know, small producers, small labels, a lot of it can be traced back to just those few large companies.
Let's end where we began. Let's go back to the shack in the woods with the still where Pappy Van Winkle lives, a place that doesn't exist. In fact, it's in a corporate headquarters, maybe. People are paying on the street in the stores $500, $700, $900 for some bottles of Pappy Van Winkle. Let's just break it down. Are they getting hoodwinked? Are they getting took?
I wouldn't pay that much. There is a lot of hype involved. It takes a long time to make this stuff. For Pappy, it's 15, 20, 23 years. They can't just turn a spigot and make more of it. So they have supply and demand pressures. And, you know, so the company is seeing this demand today, and they can't get a lot of new product in the pipeline, you know, fast enough to kind of supply that. So that you're seeing this kind of bubble.
Okay, but $500 for a bottle? Come on.
No, absolutely not. I wouldn't pay that. There are plenty of brands that taste just as good.
Well, a big heist in Kentucky, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth, many barrels worth of Pappy Van Winkle and other bourbons has only increased demand and the mystique behind this brand of bourbon. Reed Mittenbuehler is author of Bourbon Empire, The Past and Future of America's Whiskey, that comes out next month. Reed, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having me on.
Support for The Takeaway comes from LegalZoom. For over 10 years, providing solutions for business owners to get legal help, including corporate filings, legal plans featuring attorney contract review, and tax advice. Legal help is at LegalZoom.com. TIAA CREF, a financial services company helping to create financial outcomes that matter. Learn more at TIAA.org. The Henry Luce Foundation, for increased understanding of East and Southeast Asia. And the Rockefeller Foundation, whose transportation initiative is promoting equitable and sustainable developments in communities across the country.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.